is run by obviously Jellyman. You guys are in Mexico, so the former governor of the Reserve Bank of Mexico, Jellyman, Agustin Carstens. And obviously in that top bracket, you have the 64 member central banks, which is obviously like the Fed. So basically, if you speak English or even if you understand English, there's a very strong chance your central bank is in there. So what they do is they obviously control the monetary supply, able to filter to any agenda they see fit, completely distort all markets, and fund any agenda that they want to implement and defund any agenda that they see as resistance or don't want to implement. So below them, you have the global think tanks. This is obviously your Klaus Schwab, your World Economic Forums, your Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, Chatham House, etc. And there's actually a million of them. They're all, you know, Washington lobby groups, et cetera, et cetera. But what these guys do is essentially formulate the policy, have the money filtered to them, formulate the policy for the entire world, say whether it's the Great Reset or whatever, right? Below them, you have, I suppose, the enforcers. So they're intergovernmental organizations. So these organized, these multinational organizations generally have been weaponized to achieve a single goal, or at least a goal in general. So we see very, very often the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund being used as, I suppose, the carrot on the stick, if you will, or at least the stick behind the animals to beat them. So the IMF and the World Bank will obviously will often give loans to whether it's developing nations or just nations in general under the conditions that they implement the policies set above, at whether it's, and whether it's, you know, World Economic Forum policies or whether it's monetary policies like the SWIFT system set out by the BIS and the Federal Reserve. Now, below this, you have them implemented at a national level. Most people actually think that, you know, in a democratic society, they vote for somebody, and that's actually, they believe it's a much more decentralized world than it is. They think that their government's in control of them, and say, for my case, the Australian government's in control of me, the US government's in control of the US, but it's actually played at a much higher level, as you can see. So these guys are just implementing them on a national level. And below them, you have businesses of the world. So your massive tech companies that, you know, censor people and enforce the laws, kick people out, individuals out if they don't comply by these laws. Obviously, the SWIFT system, JP Morgan, the list goes on. You could write a complete book about this power structure alone. So their agendas, and this is not... The funny thing I find when explaining it to normal people is they often think that you're guessing or you're making things up or something, maybe even somewhere in between. But these agendas are actually on the websites of, you know, organizations like the BIS, the Federal Reserve, like the World Economic Forum. They're literally going out and saying they want this future. So CBDCs is completely programmable money. I'm sure you're all aware. And it allows them to manipulate any aspect of the currency they want. So it's just a couple examples. They could put time limits on your money. So if you don't spend it, if you don't spend it in a certain amount of time, they get your money. Restrictions on what you can spend it on. You could lose access to your bank account for unapproved transactions or participate in unapproved activities, such as protesting COVID lockdowns or whatever have you at the time. And what this means is that you lose all your monetary freedom. And as I say, monetary freedom is really at the basis of human expression. So you lose your freedom of expression. And just one consequence of time limits and all these kind of things is you lose your right to store wealth. And that's as if, you know, the devaluation of fiat alone wasn't enough. You actually directly lose your right to store wealth. So digital IDs, I'm sure everybody listening is pretty much all over this, as is most people in the Monero and privacy community. I won't touch on it too much, but these can come in form of things like vaccine passports or movement licenses or whatever have you. And the last agenda that we'll cover on a very high level is the social credit scores. So when you implement all these together, social credit scores, CBDCs, digital IDs, you could even be incredibly convenient and have them all in one app together. You can see that this really paves the way to lose pretty much all freedoms, or at absolute minimum, you're setting up yourself in a digital panopticon. And obviously, social credit scores is a system that can be governments or businesses to rank you and determine what activities you're allowed to do based on how good a citizen you are, right? Like we see this in China at the moment. You know, people are ranked on things by what they're buying at the grocery store. People are tracked and ranked on whether they're visiting their elderly grandparents. It's a completely dystopian society, and we're putting ourselves, or at least the global power structure wants to put us in a position where we're in a digital panopticon, so we have to bow to their every will, if you will. So the question is, how do we actually fix this, right? So these two problems are only covered at an incredibly high level, but to give you an answer at a high level to proof of work and privacy is what really fixes this. And we'll get into that. So proof of work provides long lasting prosperity. So because you're limited by spending real world resources to obtain Monero, no one can essentially steal your time like they can with fiat. It essentially puts you back onto a gold type system where you have to provide work to actually increase the supply. And the monetary policy is set in stone and no centralized authority can change it. In society, as we mentioned at the start, the consequences of decisions are re-tied to those who make the decisions. So you actually have to provide value to people in order to obtain money. So that means if you want to bail out a bank, you have to be productive in the first place to then go and give your money away, which obviously nobody's going to do. No one's going to donate billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to fiscally irresponsible, to say the least, organization. And privacy provides us freedom from the globalist technocracy that they want to implement. So privacy provides monetary freedom. It protects you financially and allows you to interact as you see fit. It gives you back autonomy over your money, which, as I say, is the most true form of freedom of expression. And this allows us, or societies in general, to build based on the true demands of people and have economies form that don't require third-party approval, which is, again, at the essence of what freedom is. So these things we've covered are at a high level. I've obviously, given the length of the talk, had to cut out a vast majority of things of the book. But stack up the cards on a pretty high level, on a quick and high level. We'll go through it in 20 points about essentially the essence of the talk and the essence of the book. So fiat money is not real money. The fiat monetary system benefits only those close to the monetary spigot. Fiat is obviously a mathematical Ponzi. An alternative monetary system is going to be needed. As we discuss more in length in the book, reform is not able to change the system. And that's even if fiat wasn't a Ponzi. Revolutionary cycles, and this has got a whole chapter dedicated to it. Revolutionary cycles are all converging to provide a platform for natural revolutionary change. We see a natural changing of the guards. So we have the 50-year technological revolution. We have an 80-year political societal revolution and a 250-year empire revolution. And as I say, all these cycles are converging all at once. Short and long-term debt cycles are converging. So if anyone's familiar with Ray Dalio's thesis on, well, not even thesis, just Ray Dalio's study on short and long-term debt cycles, generation cycles are converging as well. So that's obviously when strong men create good times create weak men create hard times, hard men, hard times create strong men, and et cetera, et cetera. And the global power structure, as we explore in the book, has, you know, an incredible amount of power to implement whatever agendas they see fit, whether that's, you know, the post-utopian agendas or whether that's, as they've outlined, socialist dystopian agendas. A future filled with technocracy and globalism will only serve to increase centralization, reduce individual liberty, serve to benefit the very few elites closest to the monetary spigot, and reduce the prosperity of the everyday person. Now, as you would know, with every empire in history, and especially a falling empire with a lot to lose, extreme efforts are always made to keep that power structure in place. So this is going to be the exact same. Any effort to deplatform the global power structure is going to be met with stiff militant resistance. And I mean, literally militant. They will get the army out. The solution to technocracy and globalism is the decentralization and privatization of money. And that's not obviously giving the money to a company. That's quite literally making money private. Creating privacy tools. Obviously summed up, two main problems are fiat, the fiat Ponzi, and technocracy / globalism. The solution to fake fiat money is hard proof of work money. Money that has real value and can't be manipulated. And the solution to technocracy and globalism is privacy tools and technology that can't be stopped. And that's simply at the end of the day, that's mathematics. Now, obviously, the method of math / the tool that counters the current and future weapons of global power structure should be used to achieve best results. As you have with any problem in life, you want to be using the best tool to achieve the best results. Now, Monero is that method, and it's actually, in my understanding, or at least opinion, it's the only method. Monero is decentralized. It is private proof of work money. Now, the last point we want to make is Monero provides the best basis we've ever seen, we've ever had as a species for building a long-lasting platform for freedom and prosperity.
Do you love coffee and Monero as much as we do? Consider making gratuitous.org your daily cup. Pay with Monero for premium fresh beans, and if you like what you taste, send a digital cash tip directly to the farmers that made it possible. Proceeds help us grow this channel, Gratuitous, and Monero.
So, the title of the book, right? The Monero Standard. So, how do we move to the Monero Standard? We've obviously covered a lot of these points already, so we won't bang on about them too much. But essentially, new technologies are adopted according to the perceived value to the user. So I always start to use the invention and adoption of radar technology. Now, radar technology was adopted, at least en masse, by the British in World War II. And as we see, difficult times were needed to happen in order for them to adopt that. So obviously we had, the Battle for Britain, a lot of German bombers coming over, bombing London, etc. Those were difficult times, and that's what made them adopt it. They had no other choice but to adopt it. And as we've outlined, difficult times are coming. Again, we see through the control of the monetary supply, and we see that the agendas are there, that they openly come out and say that they want to implement. So fiat's going to force people to look for alternative monies and a monetary system that could provide more value to them by solving the current problems with fiat. And with the dystopian world that we're moving into, people, as I say, are going to be forced to adopt monetary networks with complete privacy, proof of work and privacy. The road to adoption. So it's really not important that these all play out or they play out in this event, but there's just some things we're going to see on the road to Monero, an increased amount of Monero adoption, whether you want to call that mainstream adoption, niche adoption, or whatever the case, right? So we're going to continue to see adoption on the darknet and black markets. This is actually a massively important one. All new technologies, including money, is adopted on the fringes, right? So by criminals, by the oppressed, et cetera, et cetera. People are in these positions are literally adopting Monero at the moment. They've moved past Bitcoin. Bitcoin served its purpose at the time. There was flaws found in it, in regards to transparency / privacy. And now people are moving on to the next thing. So that is Monero. And Monero seems to fill all the problems. So cash to be banned. This is obviously going to happen. Governments are putting out feelers across the world. CBDC introduced, we already talked about this, social credit scores, digital IDs. Now, a cultural thing is we've seen a lot of people, increasing amount of people concerned about their privacy, either personal or for business. I did a podcast with Justin Herrenhofer around about last December, I think it was. And he noticed that Well, he mentioned in the podcast that the difference in people that care about privacy between now and when he got in Monero is night and day. And it really got me thinking. I think the exact same thing too. I've noticed, I think it had a lot to do with Snowden and these kind of people, but people now are caring a lot more about their personal privacy and the privacy of their business. And we're going to continue to see attitudes like this develop on a wide scale across society. Obviously, they're going to start, own nothing and be happy. They're going to ban things like meat. They've already talked about these, eat the bugs, etc. They're going to ban salt. We're going to see Bitcoin and other transparent protocols be heavily regulated, tracked and manipulated. As I said before, they're literally going to throw the kitchen sink at stopping or at everything that threatens their position in the global power structure. So Bitcoin is going to, it does threaten their position in the global power structure. The problem is that through transparency, a lot of other problems pop up, which we won't get into in this talk. But it essentially, because it can be heavily regulated, it can be tracked, it can ultimately be manipulated. And I believe you essentially take the teeth out of the tiger in that regard. So the teeth out of the lion. We're going to see more events like the Canadian trucker protests, like the Dutch farmer protests, et cetera, et cetera. Events where people are quite literally going to be kicked out of the system. And they're not going to have any other choice but to look for alternatives. We see this today with, obviously, you know, the countries like Russia, like North Korea, Iran, Libya, Yemen, the list goes on. So these people are already kicked out of the current system. We're going to, again, I don't think this is actually massively important, but I think we will see, I think we could potentially see adoption in small nations, adoption of legal tender. I don't think that matters at all, because at the end of the day, we're here to take over. We're not here to take part. So what a government does is completely relevant. Again, taxes paid in Monero as a state. Another important thing that most people won't think about is the extreme volatility we're going to see as lawmakers and as the current power institutions become increasingly irrational and desperate to keep their place there. So a great example of that is gold, a famous example of gold in the Weimar Republic, where volatility, you know, was up 1,000%, down 90%, up 10,000%, down 95%, et cetera, et cetera. And this obviously shakes a lot of people out. It makes a lot of people scared and go back to the old system. So that's just something to be prepared for. Uncle Sam, what can you do? We need you, right? So the average Joe, people like me, you can obviously build a cultural home base. It doesn't have to be on a national level. You don't have to make an entire city like Bitcoin Beach. But we need to start building out communities where you can allow the culture, where people can come together and you can allow the culture to expand. Obviously, we're more powerful together than we are divided, right? More books about Monero. I'm writing the Monero Stand at the moment. If I can guarantee you, if you ask any of my teachers in school, they would absolutely guarantee that I'd never write a book in my life. They'd probably say I'd fail and be in jail by now. More academic level courses. Hey, this is a super easy one. Monero YouTube videos, right? Anybody can do this. We need more Monero content out there, and not for, you know, a Bitcoin circle jerk reason, but quite literally we need it in different languages and we need the community to grow. And the more people who are talking about it, the more we can spread that message. Obviously, lobbying politicians to make Monero friendly laws, right? I've actually done this. I've messaged two senators from my state and one, representative from my local area, and not a single one has replied, right? But that's not to say you shouldn't try, because if we get enough people messaging them about it, because if you just have one person like me messaging them about it, one, they've probably never heard of it. Two, they only get one person mentioned about it. They don't care. But when we get enough people, like in Bitcoin at the moment, when you get enough people lobbying politicians to advocate for it, to start donating to the politicians, to make friendly laws, that can really start to make a difference. Obviously, still come into politicians who don't want to know you regardless, but that's the point. It's something that you can do. I just heard Luke Smith talking in a previous talk about onboarding new users. We should definitely onboard users, but also onboard vendors, if you will. So that's your local shops, et cetera, et cetera. Hosting events, we went through this, running nodes, committing hash power to the network. Literally, anyone can do that. That's the beauty of Monero. That's the beauty of CPU mining, is it quite literally anyone can do it at home. You don't need any specialized hardware at all. Developers, plenty of opportunities. Browser wallets, easy to use, wallets, Cake's doing a good job of that. Atomic swaps, DeFi bridges, Monero-only exchanges, that would be quite a unique idea. Big tech resistant wallet, I think that's going to be massively, massively important in the future. Monero first slash dominate exchanges, and obviously integration into other web applications. Now, the last two things we talked about, so the average John developers, what you guys do, what we do, doesn't matter unless we build a circular economy, and vice versa too. Building a circular economy doesn't matter unless we do those things as well. So by building a circular economy, we need in real life places that is Monero. So whether that's go down to your local shops, you know, tell them that you're going to go buy meat from the local butcher and I'll pay you Monero. I'll come buy all my meat for you. Like a vegetable shop, do the exact same thing. Building a circular economy also involves wholesalers and manufacturers accepting Monero. And that's quite literally the whole circle from producers all the way to consumers back to producers, right? Wages paid in Monero would be fantastic. Commodities priced in Monero as well. That's still probably a little while off, but that's another thing in regards to building this economy. Again, as I say, getting places to accept Monero, spend Monero on food, if you can rent, if you can healthcare, goods, services, and obviously tipping within the community. Monero VCs to fund Monero startups, that would be a big one. That would be, again, wholesalers, manufacturers, retailers, etc. XMR GoFundMe alternatives, I think, is a very powerful one. Some interesting stuff coming out on Nostr, not technologically savvy enough to say how Monero can be integrated into that. But I know Bitcoin is building marketplaces on Nostr, completely decentralized as such. So there is no reason, in my technological understanding, why this same couldn't be done with Monero. A cool idea I had actually was Monero payment railways like Square, just Monero companies. And yeah, also another thing is partnering with human rights organizations to highlight the aspects of privacy. You could take a lot of paths in regards to that. So that's actually a lie. I still haven't changed it, but it's coming out soon. So if anybody's interested in learning more, I really believe that this book is a phenomenal book. It really breaks down in incredible depth. What we covered today in the speech is really nothing. And what we did cover is at an incredibly high level. So you can go onto the website, monerostandard.com, grab yourself or pre-order a copy for yourself. And hey, what else can I say? Thanks so much. I don't know if anybody's got any questions, but if you do, I don't know if you have to go through the moderator or how we do this. Stop sharing my screen. Is there any questions from anybody at all?
I'm not sure if you can see the questions, but Privacy Dad just asked, can you comment on EU regulations voted on last month?
What specific regulations are you talking about?
Doesn't say anything past that.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on... I didn't even know what's happened, to be honest. So unless you could enlighten me with that. Mike and Trade. No, I don't know. I don't know anything about it, to truth be told.
They said Micah and trading regulations.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not too sure on it, to be honest.
Here's one. What if Monero were to become illegal?
Well, you know, firstly, I don't think it matters. That's actually the reason why we build these protocols, right? But in a sense, it already is, at least maybe not literally, but in a roundabout way, it kind of is. So they've obviously banned it from many exchanges around the world, including where I am here in Australia. Well, it's actually not banned. The regulations they implement make it essentially banned, like essentially shadow banned. So what they do is they make the, at least here in Australia, they make the exchange report on, you know, where the money's gone and where it's going after that. Obviously, with Monero, you can't track where it's going after that. So in that essence, they make it illegal. But where there's a will, there's a way. I mean, there's still non-KYC exchanges. There's still crypto-to-crypto exchanges that are, you could lie or whatever about your jurisdiction. They will never, I don't think they, like I said, it doesn't matter if they make it illegal. That's actually why we build these things. At the end of the day, they're going to want to make it illegal. They're going to want to attack anything that goes against their current power system. But yeah, so it doesn't matter because if I still send a transaction, it gets to whoever I'm sending it to. And that's all that matters at the end of the day.
All right. If we don't have any more questions, I think we need to get right over to the next speaker because all the power outages put us behind a little bit. Thank you so much for speaking. That was great.
Hey, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it. The talk went a little bit quicker than I expected, but I appreciate the time, guys. And it's 3:30 in the morning my time, so I'm going to hit the hay.
All right. Thanks again.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Have a good night.